Other programs this week, and this really should be the beginning of our attendance at several. I'd like to thank Rabbi Ricky Hittery and Merkaz and Moreshet Israel for putting the program together this evening. Rabbi Ricky has now a list of many nice programs that he's put together in the past couple of years, and we'll continue doing that, hopefully. No one leading to other. Thank you, Rabbi. And Rabbi Cardozo is the first speaker this evening. Many of you remember him when he was a scholar in residence here about 2.5 years ago or so. He was a tremendous success because everybody recognized that he had a message which was to provide inspiration to the Jewish people. And you were just mentioning it to me that he looks at that as the central issue today of providing inspiration. That's what he's doing in his educational institute in Jerusalem for rabbis and teachers and leaders, to provide inspiration, to provide them material, straightforward, deep, and material that can really carry them forward in their lives and their future, and that they can transmit to others. That's one of the great contributions making today with his books, with his speeches, and with his teaching, and with his academic organization. And we're very happy that we have opportunity to hear him again this evening. You know, Rabbi Cardozo has a very rich background with his mathematics and philosophy and his Torah study and his years at Or Sameach as a teacher and a leader. And he's moving along really on a path that I would say is very rare in the world, a path of combining his Torah study and his teaching together with his knowledge of the world and a very profound insight into matters. That's one of the, what I see as one of Rabbi Cardozo's great successes. So now we're going to hear some analysis of the situation of the Jewish people in Israel and the situation that we all recognize needs a lot of attention. Rabbi?
Shavua Tov to all of you. Thank you, Rabbi Shama, for introducing me. We are old friends, going back for many years. My dear friends, since we are celebrating tonight Yom Ha'atzmaut, I want to focus on some matters related to that very specific and great day in Jewish history in a way which is perhaps a little different from the way how normally people do so. Yom Ha'atzmaut is no doubt a day of celebration, of tremendous accomplishments since 1948 when the State of Israel was established. And there is indeed much to be proud about. A state which after 2,000 years comes into existence, especially after the days of the Shoah, only 3 years later, is a phenomenon in history which has never taken place anywhere else, but only with us, the Jewish people, and with the Israeli population. I happen to live in Israel for more than 30 years. I served in the Israeli army, of which I'm very proud. But I think it is time, as Rabbi Shama just indicated, that we do not just celebrate this day. Celebration is always easy. Celebration, no doubt, brings out many important aspects, and they need to be there. But we also need that day as a day of contemplation about the future of the State of Israel, and also of the future of the Jewish people. Because I think we all recognize in many ways that we are living in very critical moments today. not only in Israel, but altogether as the Jewish people around the world. Challenges have come up in the last few years which are enormous. And they will, no doubt, in many ways decide what will be with the state of Israel. And we have to recognize also that whatever is going to be with the state of Israel will greatly affect the rest of the Jewish communities throughout the world. This is not just an Israeli affair. This is a Jewish affair above everything else. And we are, and we have to recognize that, we are at this moment in a crisis. And the question is what to do about that. The first question about any crisis which any nation or any human being undergoes is to identify what is the crisis. And perhaps that is today in Israel and outside Israel one of the biggest problems. Because any crisis can be understood from many different perspectives and can be seen from many different ways. But what very often happens is that people read a crisis the wrong way and therefore they are not able to come up with a solution. We have to recognize something which is not easy. Jewish history has a lot to do with self-understanding of whom we are as Jews, as Israelis, but above all as Jews. We have to recognize that our history, and that will in great extent influence the future of us, is totally different than any other history which ever took place in this world. We are always an exception to the rule. I mentioned last year, for those who were there, but I'm not sure if you were there, just downstairs in the synagogue, it is so remarkable that our Torah tells us that it is forbidden to count Jews. One of the Tariyak mitzvot, one of the 613 commandments, is that it is absolutely forbidden to go around and count one Jew after the other to know how many Jews there are. And we are even being told that in case we do so, it will get us into great trouble. The Torah makes the point that if you start to count Jews, you may, and I'm using the word that the Torah itself uses, it may create a makefa, a plague, whatever that means. But it means that it will ultimately undermine what we are all about, and it will undermine our people. King David once counted the Jewish people, and he paid an enormous price for that, for those who know Tanakh. To understand that, and this is fundamental, and it's fundamental to speak about that, about and on Yom HaTzma'ut, is to recognize two things. Our history, Jewish history, is made out of two dimensions which are more or less absent in the history of any other people. There are two words you all know about. One word is the word galut, which means exile. And the other word is ke'ula, redemption. And we Jews have always been living between and among these two words. They created our way of thinking about ourselves and how we indeed need to think about ourselves. And let's just for a moment identify them for a few minutes. When we speak about galut, when we speak about the fact that we have been living in exile more years than we ever lived in the land of Israel. This in itself is completely exceptional. There's no other nation which ever did anything like that. But while we are living and have been living under very difficult circumstances in nearly every part of the world, we also at the same time were living in Ke'ula, in the hope that one day things will get better, that we will return back to our homeland, and we will build what today is called the State of Israel. Both elements are not just critical, they are nearly, I would say, irrational. A nation which keeps on believing for thousands of years in its ke'ula, in its redemption, is most unusual, because what happens is, how longer it takes before the redemption takes place, one should argue that after a certain amount of time, people will say, there won't be a redemption. If you are 2,000 years living in exile, there is a moment when you will say, it doesn't work. We created a dream, but the dream cannot be true because it has been taking too long and it will not happen. This, by the way, was the reason why there was at the time so much opposition, even to the creation of the state of Israel by Jews themselves. Because they couldn't see how it ever would be possible that something like this could, especially 3 years after the Shoah, after the Holocaust, come about. But if you look back into Jewish history in general, and you go back into your families, you know that all your great-grandparents believed in one thing, the Ge'ulah will come. However long it will take, it will come about. It can take 100 years, it can take 500 years, it can take 2,000 years. Jews have been dreaming about the Ge'ulah and never gave up on it. That, my dear friends, is something which is in many ways thinking in terms of what we call the Western world and the Western understanding of history, something very strange. You keep on believing in something which doesn't seem to come about, which does not seem to have a future, which seems to be indeed a dream and nothing more than a dream, that already sets us somehow outside the normal understanding of history. And then on the other side, we have this fact that while we were living in Galut, we managed to survive Galut. Normally nations, we know, history teaches us this all the time, any nation which leaves its homeland, within about 300 years it disappears. It disintegrates into another nation. The only people in the world who did not do something like that for 2,000 years and all the years beforehand in Babylon and all the other places were the Jews. Also, that is by Western criteria irrational. You don't do these things, it cannot be done, purely for one reason. What does it disintegrate? After a time you give up hope, after a time you do make an end and you say it doesn't work, and let's go for something else and assimilate. We Jews did not do that. Galut and Ke'ula. At the same time, we are an interesting people, and that is this. That this concept of living in Galut and Ke'ula created a mentality in all of us, which again is crucial for our self-understanding, by which we Jews did a most remarkable thing. We are people who still live in the past, and we are also people who are already living in the future. But hear what I say, we never live in the present. We never live now. If you look around the whole of the Jewish tradition, what is Jewish tradition doing? It constantly reminds us, for example, of all the things which went wrong in Jewish history. Is it not most remarkable, and the world has not yet understood that, and we Jews have to understand this better, that we are still, after nearly 2,000 years, sitting on the floor on the day of Tisha B'Av, and crying for the destruction of the Temple and of Jerusalem and of the State of Israel 2,000 years ago. There is no other nation in the world which comes in anywhere close to this. Can you imagine if, God forbid, New York would be destroyed, that 2,000 years later, the Americans will sit on the floor still crying about New York? There is no such thing. It didn't happen with Rome, it didn't happen with Babylon, it didn't happen with anywhere. It only happened with us. That is to say, that on the day, as our rabbis indeed tell us, on the day of Tisha B'Av, on the day of the destruction of the temple, and we're sitting on the floor and we're saying the lamentations of Yirmiyahu, what are we doing? We are re-experiencing the moment that the temple was destroyed, as if it happened this morning. It did not happen a long time ago, it happened now. That's the way how the Jew dealt with history. And so we have other tragedies and other moments which took place, and we move them to the present, to the moment now. I am at this moment sitting there on the floor thinking that this morning the temple was destroyed. You just did the same thing with Pesach. On Pesach night when we sit around the Seder, what are we being told? We should do as if today, this evening, we are leaving Egypt, although it happened 2,000 years ago or nearly 4,000 years ago. We are tremendous mourners, But we also constantly take that past and we pull it to the present and we are living it through once more. No, we are living it now as if it never happened before. But we do something else as well. We are unbelievable optimists also. Why? Because what we do is we already live in the future. Things which have not yet happened, we say, since in any way they will happen, why not celebrating them now? Think about, for example, something like Shabbat, as we just experienced. What is Shabbat? The rabbis tell us Shabbat is Ke'en Olam Haba. It is like the world to come. It is like the Messianic Age. Every week we, for one day, live in the Messianic Age. The Messianic Age is not yet there. But we say, well, in any way, since it happens, why shouldn't we make already now use of it? Let's live one day in a week in that particular situation, as if the Mashiach is already there. So what do? We take the past and we move it to the present. We take the future and pull it backwards also to the present. And therefore our present is made, the moment in which we as Jews live, as a nation live, we live in a world which is or already been or is still to come. And my dear friends, that's the reason why whenever the world tries to fall on top of us, as they have done for so many thousands of years, they are not able to catch us. You know why? They want to catch us in the now. And we always say, sorry, we are not there. We are already gone, or we are still in the future. And this is fundamental to understand who we are. And as long as we don't read our history like that, and we don't understand ourselves in these terms, and we think that we are a nation like any other nation, we are only undermining ourselves. We are not the Romans. We are not the Greeks. How interesting. We outlived all of them. All of them stood up against us. From the days of Egypt, as we celebrated on Pesach, the Babylonians, the Persians, all of them afterwards. You just go through the whole of Jewish history. All together, we outlived six empires who fell on top of us, tried to destroy us, and did indeed a lot of harm to us. But we outlived them all. And I can tell you as an academic person that the world, especially the academic world, the historians, the people who are studying anthropology, they look to us and they say, this does not make any sense. We are constantly trying to kill them, and every time the next day they are back again. Every time the Jew does something which the world does not allow him to do. And you know what it is? To violate the rules of history. We are great violators. We are constantly not going for whatever history normally teaches us. A nation which is without a homeland disappears in 300 years. We violated it. And we keep on violating it. Today we are surrounded by millions and millions of people who don't want us in that little place called Israel, which is so small, by the way, that you need magnifying glasses to find it on the map. And the whole world, by the way, is busy with us, which is itself a very interesting thing. There are much bigger problems in this world, but everything is focusing on this little people living in this nowhere land. And the world again looks and says to us, we don't allow you to do this. You are again violating the rules of history. You should have disappeared a long time ago. One of the great historians in our days was Arnold Toynbee. Perhaps you've heard that name. Arnold Toynbee on several occasions opposed the state of Israel, he said, because we will not allow a nation 2,000 years later to come back to its homeland. You know why? That's a violation of history. Nobody ever did anything like that. We should not permit anybody to do anything like that. We have been standing at the tombstones of all our enemies. Yes, we paid an enormous price, especially in the days of the Shoah, but we outlived them all. And Toynbee, who was a little anti-Semitic, writes, therefore, he says, an interesting thing. Any nation which touched the Jewish people to destroy it ultimately disappeared from the globe of the world. The only people around still today are the Germans. And it's a very good indication to say that they will neither make it. You touch the Jews, on the end you will disappear. But just imagine that you would have lived 2,000 years ago in the land of Israel, and you would for one moment have asked yourself the question, the Romans are walking in and Titus is walking in and taking over this land and destroying many millions of Jews, and anybody would have asked you, what do you think? Will the Romans still be around in another 2,000 years, or will the Jews be around in another 2,000 years? Nobody in this world would have said, the Jews will still be there and the Romans will be gone. And today, that's exactly what it is. Not a Roman around anymore. Not a Persian around anymore. Anybody standing up against us ultimately disappeared. That's fundamental to our own understanding of whom we are. And let me therefore tell you something else. The contribution which Jews have made to the world, especially to Western civilization, is totally out of proportion by all dimensions and all criteria. We should never have been heard about. We are so incredibly small that nobody should ever bother with us. There are in Africa, there are tribes there which are 100 times more numerous in the amount of people than we are. You can't even pronounce the name, you probably haven't heard about them. And we, that little nation, the whole world, for the good and for the bad, is busy with us till this very day. Anything will happen. If, God forbid, something goes wrong in Israel, and one of our fantastic soldiers kills another person by accident, or even because out of self-defense, the whole world stands on its back. And the whole world is upset with us. Why? In the meantime, in other places in the world, millions of people get killed every day, and not a word is being said about it. We are the exception to the rule. And let me say something. The very fact that you are sitting still here, and that we Jews are around after 4,000 years to all what happened to us, and after an Holocaust, this irritates many people in this world. We are an irritating people. But I tell you something else as well. Our function is to irritate. Don't tell Rabbi Shammah, but this is mitzvah number 614. You shall irritate. And I'm very serious about that. Because what it means is that we bring people and make them aware that history is something very different from what we think it is. You can read Roman history and you can read Jewish history. And once you start to understand Jewish history by way of the Romans, you are misunderstanding totally what is happening to us. Every time fitting us in something, in a Roman secular understanding of whom we are, ultimately will lead us nowhere. And this is exactly the crisis in which we live today in Israel. I'm a proud Israeli, as just said before, I consider myself a great Zionist. I'm very proud that I served in the Israeli army, but what I see in front of me is exactly this problem. What do we want with the state of Israel? And I'm going to use a very heavy word. Do we want to normalize ourselves in that place? Is Zionism the way by which we become a normal nation like everybody else? Is that its ultimate goal? Or is the ultimate goal of Zionism to make sure that we do not normalize ourselves? And that we constantly understand that we are, after all, different, and that only because we are different we are able to make a contribution to the rest of mankind. And this is, at this moment, exactly what's going on in the state of Israel. The question, what is Zionism? Is Zionism there to make us like everybody else? Or is Zionism exactly that what makes it possible for us not to be like anybody else, and to continue, and I'm going to use another very dangerous word, to continue to be a little abnormal. We are an abnormal people. We are an anormal people. We don't function by the normal criteria of history, of psychology, and whatever it is. And up till now, and I'm speaking in the last few years, there were two readings of Zionism. The normalization of the people, or just and specifically not to normalize the Jewish people. For a long time, these two groups worked together because there was one goal, the building of the state of Israel. But Baruch Hashem, now we have the state of Israel, and the establishment and the accomplishments have been great. And what is happening? A very strange thing. I come from a Zionist secular background at home. My parents told me always that Zionism is the solution to anti-Semitism. If we just would go back to our own homeland and we will have our own place and we won't have to live anymore among the other people, then they will accept us. That was always the great concept of Zionism. Because the reason why they didn't like us is because we are living as a nation among nations. But if we would have our own people and we would have our own land and we would have our own army and our own Knesset, then the world will accept us. And what do we see now? We see exactly the reverse of this. That what should have been the solution became the problem. Because what is now anti-Semitism? Anti-Semitism is basically telling us that we should not have gone back to the land of Israel. Exactly what that what should have indeed made a solution to the problem, now is creating the solution. And because of that reason, the Israeli world is in great, great pain. Because it suddenly realizes that, and forgive me for using that name, but that is, and it is not a correct name because I don't believe in these names, but the more secular reading of Zionism has exploded right in front of our eyes at this moment. And what now has to happen is that we have to realize that the state of Israel can only continue when it has a strong Jewish identity. I do not mean by that tomorrow we have to create a halachic state. I don't think that's possible. But I do believe that it is possible to create a state where everyone, as Israeli walking around, walks around with a feeling like, I am a Jew, I'm proud about it, I'm proud about my Yahadut, about my Judaism. I may not personally observe it, but I'm at least proud about it. But we have not created that society. And I must say that one of the reasons why we haven't created it, and I'm looking first of all in the mirror and looking to myself, is because we, the religious people, were not able and have not done a good job in inspiring the secular Israeli to understand how great it is to be Jewish. And we must change that. It is not going to happen through just the political parties. It needs a revolution from within, that we slowly start to understand that the only answer to the problem in which we live today is when we start to understand ourselves as we are a people which is different from everybody else, not in the sense that we are better than anybody else, but definitely that we are different from anybody else, and that our identity is built on concepts which the world around us does not know about. If they, that is to say, and I speak with a lot of experience, if we would tell the world that indeed we have a different function, and we would be proud about our Jewishness, they would somehow accept the state of Israel much more than by constantly making compromises on our own Jewish identity, which does not get us anywhere at all. These are hard words to say, but that's exactly what it is all about. But it will depend indeed on one fact. It will depend on the fact how orthodoxy and the Orthodox world will be able to give that kind of inspiration, which at the moment it is clearly lacking, and I'm pained to have to say this. Why is it that you're not allowed to count Jews? My dear friends, let me read you a statement by a great, and you will straight away understand, by a very great anthropologist. A man has been a Jew by the name of Milton Himmelfarb. He wrote the following words, and I hope you remember that. I would suggest hang it above your bed and repeat it every morning when you get out of your bed. He says like this: the sum total of the Jewish people today throughout the world is smaller than a statistical error in the Chinese census. You want me to repeat that? I want you to learn this by heart. What it says is the total population of the Jewish people in this world is smaller than a statistical error in a computer made concerning the Chinese census. So small we are. If you think in terms of how small we are, you and I would no longer be there. If we count ourselves by how many we are, we have no chance. But think about something else. How do we count Jews? We count Jews by the contributions they make. The Torah says the only way you're allowed to count the Jews is to take half a shekel and to give it to the Beit HaMikdash or to Mishkan. That's not just charity. It means to say you can only count Jews by what they did to the world. The tremendous contributions which we made, totally out of proportion. we should never have heard about, we should never have had any say in science, in psychology, and definitely in religions matters, we are too small. But the truth about it is we made enormous contributions there. And as we understand that properly, and we would understand that that's our function in this world, and that we understand that we as Jews have a very important role to play for the betterment of the rest of mankind, and that that is the very reason why the state of Israel is there, and that's the reason why we fight all these wars, and why, God forbid, we have to lose these soldiers of ours, these fine, fantastic people, then at least we know what we are fighting for. Remember one thing. The only way how you can live your life is when you know there is something worthwhile dying for. If there's nothing to die for, then there's nothing to live for. And we are trying very hard, and I already believe that in this moment in Israel there's a change taking place, also in a more secular society, when they start to understand, yes, things are different with us. Or we go back to our Jewish identity, or we're not going to make it. The solution is there, my dear friends. The solution is to go back to some kind of Yahadut, to a deep concept of Zionism, which is linked up with the kind of Yahadut, which is the kind of Judaism, which tells us we stand out, we have to be extremely proud, we can make even greater contributions to the world, but only as Jews. I once said, and forgive me for saying so, perhaps the biggest mistake which we made is when we start to call ourselves Israelis. Because Israeli somewhere became a word by which we were able to cover up the Jewishness of whom we are. We are Israelis because we live in the land of Israel. But the ultimate goal is to be Jews and not to be Israelis. There is a Jewish army and not just an Israeli army. Once we understand that, I dare to say, if the government, if the people of Israel will understand this, and I think it will come, I'm an optimist, I believe in the next 50 years you will see a tremendous shift taking place within Israel, where more and more Israelis will understand they have to go back to this Jewishness, unless it will not work. And they will be far wise enough to see this and understand that. And once that happens, we will be in a much better situation, and many more people will then start, indeed, to have more kavod and honor for us. How more kavod and honor we have for the Jewish tradition and for ourselves, the more the world will have. The less we have for ourselves, the less the world will have. That we need to learn. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the power, the strength, and the pride to do this. Amen. Thank you very much.
I'd like to introduce Davella Segal, who's an assistant mayor of Kedemir. She was there from the beginning, born in South Africa. Fascinating story. She's going to be speaking in West Hill Shul tomorrow night. So we have the privilege of hearing and seeing a presentation about it. So please give her a
Shavua Tov to all of you. I would like to thank Rabbi Dari and Rabbi Shama for coordinating this evening. I couldn't find a better introduction to what I'm going to say to the introduction of Rabbi Carduzo. Amazing, mamash amazing, and I hope the message I will bring to you, which is an optimistic message in the end, will show you exactly what he said, that there is a solution. We came from Kdumim, the first community that was established in the Shomron. I want to apologize, I have a little problem with my voice, so I'll do my best. Before I speak about our life, again, I will speak about the ties we are in. Very special, significant dates. Amazing that the modern dates that we are in today are exactly between significant dates in the Jewish calendar, Pesach and Shavuot. Pesach, which resembles the physical redemption of our people, building a nation, and from Memtet Sharei Tum'ah, coming to Shavuot, getting the Torah, which gives us this special identity. Yom HaShoah and Yom HaTzma'ut, Yom Yerushalayim, are all between Pesach and Shavuot. Yom HaShoah, the worst persecutions that we had since we were a nation, you know, you mentioned last week, and this week we're going to celebrate Yom HaTzma'ut, which is the peak of success of our days, from the ashes of the Shoah, building a state, as the Rabbi mentioned, in 3 years. Amazing miracle that you can't conceive what kind of miracle. Many miracles of a nation that was detached from its land, came back and built a state. I hope it will be okay. Just a moment, something happened to the... I want to help you. We have the whole PowerPoint present. Ah, it's out. Sorry. Okay, she will open it in the meantime. So, okay. When we celebrate, it's open? When we celebrate Yom HaTzma'ut and we appreciate the miracles, we're still in these few years celebrate with mixing feelings because of what we see in these days in Eretz Israel. Many troubles. I meet a lot of people in the United States. I go from community to community. And I must tell you that I hear voices of depression. People express their feeling. What is going on in Eretz Israel? All the security problems, the corruption, lack of values, all those Zionistic values that we knew in the past disappeared. So what I would like to tell you this evening is to show what you don't see in the CNN, what is not told in the newspapers, to show you the other side of the coin, that you have in Eretz Israel people that are Zionistic, that carry the Zionistic values, the Zionistic drive with Jewishness and building the land with great sacrifice. I'm going to tell you about the people living in Yehudah and Shomron, and especially about Kdumim, the first community that was established in the Shomron, that I merited to be one of the founders. So where is Kdumim on the map? Here. Thank you. You have the map of Israel, I hope you all see and know it. Kdumim is here where I'm pointing, in the center of Israel. The width of Israel from Mediterranean to Jordan Valley is 50 miles only. And Kdumim is 25 miles from the coast, 25 miles from the Jordan Valley. we are on hills, Jerusalem, here. From the hills of Gdumim, we can see the densely population of Israel. From Hadera till Ashdod, on clear days we can see the sea. And when we turn our backs to the east, we see Mount Ebal, Mount Gerizim, Shechem, half of Israel from this very spot. It's opening. Okay. What brought me, a young couple, I was living in an established place in Tel Aviv with my husband, at that time 3 kids, thank God today I have 9 children, 15 grandchildren as a beginning. I was living in Tel Aviv, established neighborhood, my husband in high tech, I'm an optometrist on my, I'm working as an optometrist for a living. We didn't have to look for any good life. But we left Tel Aviv and moved to the barren hills of the Shomron to a tent. What made me do such a change, change my lifestyle? The turning point of my life was the Six-Day War, in which we saw, witnessed a miracle in our days, a miracle how Israel was saved from annihilation by 3 nations. But more than that, we saw the miracle of going back to our homeland, to Yudai Shomron, to Hebron, to East Jerusalem, to Beit El, to Beit Lechem. This was more the excitement in the whole state than the actual physical victory. Great days, great joy and excitement, and the atmosphere was really very high. Many people came to visit Beit Lechem, Marat HaMachpelah, the Kotel, as you know, but no one thought we have to settle them. And we said, this war, this miracle requires from us action, something. I joined a group that said it is not enough to visit these places, we have to literally move and stay there and settle them. And this is what we did. 7 years, 3 years between 1973 and 1975, we had a great struggle in which we came 7 times, each time with people, with our equipment, with everything in order to settle next to Shechem. No Jews were living here, nothing. It was prohibited to stay overnight. There was no government intention to settle. And these were huge areas that we were holding, but not living. 7 times we were evacuated, until there was a growing debate in Eretz Israel, how come Jews can live in New Jersey, in Virginia, but they can't stay in their homeland. In the end, as a result of determination, as a result of the popular support, we received the permission to stay in those places. I have a video clip which we're waiting to see. It wasn't connected. In this video clip, original video clip from those days, from 1973, 1975, you will see how we came and started to settle, and how with children and people who went through the land, we did this great struggle. Historic video clip, which you see, there's a picture beginning with Ariel Sharon and Rav Kook, passed away. Both were joining this struggle, showing you the spectrum of support. Here you can see these 3 years, some clips of how we came through the mountains, and all kinds of people, I must tell you, very interesting, from the kibbutzim, from the non-religious kibbutzim, El Harod, El Vered. No, it's okay. They came because those people felt, it was after the Yom Kippur War, with a very low depression of atmosphere, they felt that somebody is continuing Zionism and elevating their feeling. So they joined and said, these people are doing what we did. in the beginning of the century. What you see here is Hanukkah 1975, in which the eighth attempt ended with the decision that we are permitted 30 families out of the crowd to stay in an army camp. You can see Paris here, who signed the contract that we can stay there temporarily until the government will decide what to do with us. From this temporary decision, they were sure that we will end up leaving. They were sure that by a government decision, in the end, we will leave. We grew to 300,000 Jews in Yehuda and Shomron. This was the opening. We opened the way to Jewish life. And I must tell you, many people were sure this is a passing episode. We were living without electricity, without running water, without any facilities. Most of us, professionals, doctors, people in high tech, somebody was traveling to the nuclear reactor. These were the kind of people who came, and they were sure that we won't last. But the map that you see here is the result of the determination and the devotion of not giving up, of cold nights, of no milk in the store because we didn't have a store. 150 communities in Yehuda and Shomron. This map that you see here is a map that we created, because when I come to the United States and I open the New York Times and I have to give information about Israel and the conflict, you see the former green line, Jenin, Ramallah, and Jerusalem. There's nothing else. Nothing. Empty. We want to show what we have. Jewish life in Yehuda and Shomron. Now, I must tell you, I meet many congregations. And it's amazing to see how many misconceptions there are about people living in Yehuda and Shomron. Settlers. The settlers. First of all, people don't know how much we are established. I told you 300,000 Jews. Dumim numbers 800 families. 5,000 people. Normal neighborhoods. From those tents, we grew to 10 neighborhoods with nice houses, with centers, with industrial centers, with schools, with high schools. People, I mean, think that we are living a tent, a camel, and a mishiganim. This is a settlement. So this is number one, what people think about the communities. People have the stigma about a settler, a person like me. They think that we are fundamentalist, aggressive, fighting with the government and Arabs all day long. And this is totally so wrong. We are building the land, but we are all kinds of people. From hard-working people to high-tech people, people from the whole world, from South America, North America, Russian Jews, Ethiopian Jews, seniors, youngsters, all kinds of people, Sfaradim, Ashkenazim, together, all living without any problem, more religious and non-religious. Some people who are considered secular, which I don't like to use this term, living to me. And as you see, we have everything you need, sports and music and a senior center, all that. And another misconception is people think that the whole day long, the only thing that bothers us is how to grab another land, another part, and settle it. That's not the only thing we did. It is amazing to see how the same people who took upon themselves the idea of holding the land are taking care about aliyah, special education, non-religious and religious. What you see here is a school, in addition to the regular schools, for boys with ADD and ADHD, a yeshiva, for the whole center of Israel, not for Dumim. We are the only school in Dumim serving boys that have ADD and ADHD and were kicked out of the schools and almost in the streets with drugs. A great success in Gdumim. And Ethiopian girls, we have 150 Ethiopian girls, which we absorbed. And as I said, non-religious and religious, our kids go out to Tel Aviv to all kinds of meetings. Rabbi Cardozo mentioned the problem in Israel, which will not come through politicians. I can tell you that my son, number 8 son, who was involved in Gush Katif all the year during his matriculation, he was trying to, like many, to prevent it. After the destruction happened, it was before the Chagim, he disappeared to Tel Aviv. It was before the Chagim that prepared Minyanim for secular people, hundreds, they did everything to have it, and he was there, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. So I asked him, Itamar, with whom did you work? Who were all those youngsters in Tel Aviv? He said, Ima, most of them from the settlements. So the same people who have room to settle the land are concerned about other issues that bother the Israeli society. And now I gave you a nice description about Gdumim. I would like to show you, maybe we'll show the aerial map. Shoshana? What? This is Daniela Weiss, our mayor, who is a known figure in Israel. And what I wanted to show you is from the air, you can see how Gdumim, it is impressive, because what everyone knows about communities is so different than what it is. And you can see this map here, which is the jurisdiction of Gdumim. Later you will see it, and we will be impressed by the neighborhoods. And this route takes us to an outpost. You hear about outposts, as the rabbi spoke about, the whole world concerned about Eretz Israel, so they are concerned about an outpost somewhere, some kids are building the land. So this is what we have. Daniela Weiss is the mayor of Gdumim, as you see, a person with vision, who had courage to do many things that seemed to be irrational at that time. As we say, most of what we did seemed to be irrational, but became very significant in Israel. And you can see many politicians that even disagree politically, appreciate truth, appreciate resolve and success. So I gave you this as an introduction. What is Gdumim? This is Ariel Sharon, who was one of the greatest supporters of the communities, and he came often to Gdumim. When I spoke about how we established Gdumim, it was a pioneering period in which we had a long time without any necessities, physical necessities, very difficult. So I must tell you, our life are a life with tests. And the test of living without everything you need for everyday life and light and water became paradise in compare to the later years that we went through. The terror, the political problems. And I must tell you, Gdumim, like many other places, lost people in the area, on the ways, Rabbi Herling, who was killed in the beginning of the Intifada. 3 kids from the school, I told you about the school, ADD and ADHD, they were killed not in Gdumim, but on the way, waiting for a bus to take them to Gdumim, or in a pizza store in Karmel Shomron, and girls from the high school. The son-in-law of the mayor was killed in Elon Moré. Here he is, from one of the best units of Israel. He was murdered with his parents and grandfather, and his wife took the daughter and hid underneath the table, and this is how she saved them. Tragedies we went through. Just a year ago, before Pesach, a terrorist dressed like a Jew he acted like a hitchhiker and entered a car that was traveling from Karnei Shomron to Kdumim, and he pulled the bullet, the vest, and killed four people. This couple, a girl that was in national service in Kdumim, and a boy of 16. These things did not break us. These painful tragedies, and the orphans that live in Kdumim, and the widows, and didn't cause us less belief in our way. On the contrary, more building, more people came, more strength. And I want to show you one of the best clips that I have, showing how the people in the communities are so strong. You will see David Arben, who lost his son 3 years ago. His son moved to another community, and he was shot and left five orphans. He was sitting Shiva, the resident of Dumim, when he was then a minister, Uzi Lando, came to comfort him. So the video clip was taken without him even noticing.
Stop to work.
No bed? We're waiting. Moment. Computers.
צעד בכיוון שכולנו חונכנו ומחנכים.
שומרים שלי עשו, שהביאו אותי ארץ להם, שאמרו לי דוד, קדימה. שאנחנו נגד רפואים את שלוש, אתם טובים? אמרנו לו, קדימה. כשהוא הגיע לתלמון, קצת קדימה. מה הבינו כולנו למקום שאנחנו נכנים? עתק ולא שמנתם ולא ועדה כזאת או ועדה אחרת ואותנו כאן השחרור הפנימי שפה אנחנו לא באף מקום אחר פה וכל זה שלי בינו שוטט רק שווה אותו לעולם, רק שווה אותו לגדולים, לא רק שווה אותו לברית, לא רק שווה אותו לחטוף, לא רק שסבבת בכל סיפור טוב.
I hope you sensed the strength of this person who represents many people in the communities that pay the price of living in these places, but they know their goal. The only thing that bothers him, and this is the last sentences he says, is we don't regret, we're not breaking. But what makes us painful is the fact that the whole direction changed, the direction of the state changed. So he paid the price when there is a goal. But when you feel that things are very wrong, it's very difficult to go forward. In any case, this was the test of terror that we paid. And the tests didn't end. As you know, we didn't leave the community as a result of terror, and the people, Gush Katif and Northern Shomron, as a result of 6,000 rockets, did not leave. But we went through the other test of the political decision of destroying the communities. We went through a very difficult time. I know that you too, everyone felt how terrible it was. We were all involved for a year and more in all kinds of ways to prevent it, if it was marching, if it was to go into those places, our kids, our families, pregnant, not pregnant, everyone was connected. And unfortunately, this happened. And what makes us painful, first of all, the destruction of the communities. Numbers two, the situation of those that were evacuated, transferred, that are not settled till this day. And the most painful thing is to discover how we were right, that the situation, the security situation, deteriorated, brought only the opposite. The whole area, as you know, and here around Gaza Strip, the range of rockets grew, the kind of rockets are worse. There are no Jews, no soldiers, and inside a lot of weapons, terrible weapons are going in. My son is a paratrooper. He had a drill lately before Pesach. He said to me that the officers that trained them said that they are demanding from the government to get into Gaza very quick before the summer, because it will be late if they won't destroy the infrastructure that will be very dangerous for Israel. This is the situation as a result of the destruction, and you can see what rockets can do. The war of Lebanon and what we went through in Gaza proved what we said always, that all the concessions have a reverse effect. The more you give, the worse the situation is. It is ironically to see how Gaza, in which there are no settlements there, high fence, no territorial dispute, Lebanon the same, high fence, no territorial dispute, those borders are more dangerous than where I live, next to Shechem. And why it is like that? You know, when the war of Lebanon last year happened in the summer, you didn't hear about another front line. You heard about the whole north. You heard about the rockets. You didn't hear about 30 terror events that were averted, that didn't happen in Israel, because the army is inside Shechem, the army is in Jenin, and therefore they prevent on a daily basis, every day. I just read Shabbat, this Shabbat, they were in Jenin and caught a terrorist. Before Pesach, they caught a terrorist in Bat Yam with a bullet, with a belt ready to detonate. So this unit that you see here is stationed in Kdumin, not to protect Kdumin. They utilize the community and the facilities of the community in order to go every day to Shechem, and they catch terrorists and prevent terror. This picture is a very special one. This is next to Kdumin, and on the hill there you can see Chomesh, which was still built. Chomesh was a community from northern Shomron that was destroyed, just to show you how Kdumin is close to Chomesh. In any case, the principle I want to bring to you, a very important principle: wherever you have Jewish life, you have security. The communities go, the army comes after the communities, not before. Gaza Strip without Jews is more dangerous for Israel than it was before with Jews that could prevent all the weapons coming in. Northern Shomron today is the most dangerous area because there are no communities and the army has no reason to be there. And our area, in which there are many, many Jews, the army is there to go to Shechem. It is a protection to the center of Israel. Here you can see my son-in-law, who is in a very special unit, with the van unit, catching terrorists every day. Our kids are in the best units. So there is a connection between Jewish life and security. This is a very important principle, but this is not the only reason why we are there. We are there because it is ours. And I must tell you, the Lebanon war, in which we went through, created an earthquake in Israel. An earthquake, the surprise, the whole thing. There are commissions now, inquiry commissions. But even though we went through the war, and the government decided not to go on the convergence plan, you still hear about all kinds of plans, maybe the Saudi plan, this plan, I'm not getting into it. I just want to say, the political establishment and the media still don't believe in our rights on the land. And this is why, instead of coming to the conclusion, after all the attempts of withdrawals, with their partners, without their partner, to go back and build Yehuda and Shomron and stay there, the bottom line is how we can live. There is a disengagement from our roots, from the land and the Torah. And the rabbi mentioned it, this is the reason of many problems that we're facing, this detachment of our roots. And you must know, the beginning of the land, the Chalutzim who came without anything, managed a lot, without the high tech, without economy, because they had the roots and they had the belief. You need purpose, you need meaning. And this is what we have, the people living in Yehuda and Shomron. We carry the belief, we carry the reason and the meaning. And therefore, even though it is difficult, we overcome. And even though there are some places we don't manage, we go forward. Okay, sometimes we lose. In Gush Katif we lost. Doesn't mean we don't continue. And this is how we trained our second generation. And here I'm going to conclude with the optimistic view. It's now Yom Ha'atzmaut coming close, and we said we have the problems, we know it is not easy times. We analyze the reason why we are in such a situation, but the solution is a growing generation that believes in our rights, in our Torah connection, and this is our second generation growing in Kedumim. Most of the kids stay in the community, 80% of them live in Kedumim. Two of my married children, 10 grandchildren are in Kedumim. Yeah. Another one in Eili. And if they don't go to the community, they go to more difficult places. They are involved in settling the land. And I must tell you, people think, okay, they are primitive, settling the land, this is what they do. They combine their self-achievements. Two of my kids are doctors. They live in Kedumim. They can combine idealistic life with achieving a good profession, an economical profession. There's no contradiction, but they know the proportions. What is first? Our second generation is our hope that we will save Israel. Here you can see, speaking about, this is going back to Chomesh, they are involved in it. They go to the best units. Shoshana sitting here, the son is an officer in one of the best units. My son is in Sayeret Matkal, if anybody knows what it is. These are our kids that are, you know, in the Lebanon War, 95 of our boys were fighting in Lebanon. My son is in this unit. This is the hope. And with this I want to end and show you a video clip, because you know I'm here to speak about the situation, about Yom Ha'atzmaut and our feelings. Thank God our success. And I must tell you, we feel that today the most important thing is to strengthen those people holding the land, their everyday life. And for this youth we have, we are building a youth center. I'm going to show you, to end with it, and you will have questions later, the project of the youth center, and you have material here in which you can check with what you can help to me. So this is the last one. Just this?
Ah, it's not here.
While I bring that up, I want to thank both our speakers. And just so you know, that they're both involved in such important causes. And on the tables, you'll find envelopes and ways that you can help if you'd like to donate. And if you're not going to move there, at least there's something to contribute to what they're doing.
And you all invited to come. You have the details, my email. Come to see, you will be inspired and more strengthened about the situation in Israel.
ארץ מולדת, זו יפה, יפה יפה, זו יפה.
Our kids volunteer every year with handicapped kids for the whole of Israel. Every summer, about 100 handicapped, severely handicapped, all the youth, without our help, from scratch, they do everything, all the program, the food, everything. It's something outstanding. This boy lives in Kdumim. He lost his mother and three siblings in Itamar, and he moved to Kdumim with his father. This is in Gush Katif involvement, the youth activities. This is the building outposts next to Kdumim, Chabad Gilad.
While we were preparing already for the Seder, for the holiday, a terrible terror attack happened here in Kdumim. A suicide bomber, an Arab terrorist, he was hitchhiking, and one of our friends took him on his car on the way to Kdumim. The car exploded at the entrance of our community of Stok Kdumim, and four people were murdered. Two veteran citizens of Kdumim, and Raut Feldman, a volunteer here in the community, and Shaked Lasker, who is standing here next to his home. Shaked was one of the prominent figures among our youth, and the four of them were murdered at one terrible moment at the entrance of Kdumim.
ילד שמח, ילד מתוק, ילד שם משחק במעל, ופשוט היה עושה שלום, ופשוט ילד ששמו לב שהוא נמצא, כי הוא העיר פנים לכולם.
Shaked's murder and death left a huge vacuum within his school, within his yeshiva, within his class, and especially more so with us in the family. Shaked was very popular at school, with friends out of school as well, his age, older than him. And this vacuum had to be filled up. And thank God, the kids of the school and from Kdumim's friends, they filled this vacuum very nicely, very well.
The reaction of the friends of Shaked was one of the most, I would say, unexpected reactions one could conceive of. They decided to carry out what they named the March of Faith. They were tortured, and they so much identified with the family, but they said, no, we will not be. We will give expression in front of the entire world. Before God, we will show that we are strong and that we are not diminished in our faith in God, and we will not stop our endless efforts to build the land of Israel. So they carried out this long, long march from the place where our members who were melted. They took the hitchhiker at Karmei Shomron and exploded here at the entrance of Kedumim. They marched all through this trail, up the mountains, down the hills. They marched to the place where the terrible terror act took place. And over there they had this ceremony in which they spoke about their sorrow and about the people who were killed.
This is one of the few activities that this youth has done in the last 10 months since your kid has been killed. Every Thursday night here, like tonight, we have a shiur here at our house. The youth come, at least 30 people each Thursday night.
We are planning now, the municipality, together with people who support us in Israel and abroad, we are planning to build a youth center not far from here. This youth center is going to serve the thousands of young people in Kedumim and in the area, with sports, with culture, with different social activities. I personally address you to understand what we are doing here, to identify with what we are doing here, and to take part in the physical, financial support of this important project, which is a sort of salute to the young people who found the courage and the faith at such a critical moment.
Thank you very much.
Any question? I know it's late, but...
Thank you very much.